This is Small Business Conversations on PBN, brought to you by Profits Plus Solutions. Increasing your profits plus building your business for the future. We are Profits Plus. You can find us at profitsplus.org. This is Small Business Conversations on PBN, the Profitable Business Network. Now, the host of Small Business Conversations, principal of Profits Plus Solutions. Here is Tom Shea.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Blake Shea. I am the youngest installment of Tom Shea. I will be guest hosting tonight. Just to let everyone know, tonight's Small Business Conversations is being recorded. It will be on the Profits Plus website in two formats, MP3 for those wanting to download to their listening device, and as a click and listen link on the profitsplus.org website. Bruce Giroux, our information stud, takes care of that from his office in sunny Orlando, Florida. Small Business Conversations is also available on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, Google, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and wherever else good podcasts are found. During the program, we will be monitoring email and Facebook so that your questions and comments can be received at any time. And without any further ado, here is my dad, Tom Shea.
Thank you, Blake. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm fine. A little cool up here in Arkansas, but how are things in Florida?
Very sunny. Summer is right around the corner.
Good. Well, thank you for coming and being on the program. Do you remember at some point in time that you were... You got to take and work it with me in the office?
I do, and I remember how intimidating it was when the phone rang and I answered, and I said, hello, and then someone said, is Tom there? And I said, let me go get my daddy.
Well, Blake is on the show tonight. His twin is not with us tonight. But he and later his sister will be on the program because they take our daughters and sons to work day. It's held on this Thursday every April. It was always a celebration in our business because I wanted the kids to see what it is that I did for a living, and I wanted them to be able to decide for themselves, was this what they wanted to do? And I think that's important for all of us to let our children be exposed to our work and feel for themselves, well, just what does that parent of mine do? And perhaps decide that, yes, I want to take and follow in the same footsteps. So, Blake, thank you for being with us. Glad to have you on the program tonight. When you see your twin, tell Darren that Dad says hello. Sorry he couldn't be with us tonight.
I will. He's out playing soccer tonight, but I will see him later.
But of course he is, because that's his thing.
That's his oxygen.
Well, as we start the program, that's his oxygen. We always start the program with a bit of recording that traditionally relates to our guest. Such is not the case tonight. Tonight is a bit of a celebration. It's an anniversary in that it was 12 years ago that we had the first Small Business Conversation, except back then we called it e-retailer conversations. Not sure where we got that name. And in doing so, we just wanted to find experts around the country that we could take and visit with who would share information about what they do, and tonight will be no exception. But real quick, here's tonight's So I am really thrilled to have this guest come back. He was recommended to us by our very first guest, Mike McCormick, the CPA. Our guest tonight wrote a book. the book is titled Thriving with Stress. And as he writes about it, he says, thriving with stress is not rocket science or some kind of magic black box that instantly and secretly transforms people. It's also not a form of self-help therapy. It's a straightforward and easy-to-implement concept that helps you understand what stress responses feel like in the moment. So our purpose tonight, as I wrote about in the invitation to all of you, is dealing with stress and coronavirus. And as I mentioned, we're not going into the discussion of the political aspect of it. We're not going into discussion of this with regard to the medical field. I can't count how many people around me have had the virus. And at the moment, I can't count the number of people that I knew who died from the virus. So I'm wanting to be respectful of that. Our concern and our interest tonight has been observations of people and businesses that have become what I would use as a word, and we'll let our guest tell me if that's the right word or not, paralyzed by what's going on and perhaps gotten too comfortable with the changes that have been forced them since March of 2020. And with that being said, our guest tonight is psychologist Dr. Frank Wood. Frank, you're with us, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Thanks, Tom.
Well, thank you that you would take the time to be with us. I realize that you are not in your normal residence, that you've had to travel, and at that point, wherever you are located at the moment, are kind enough to get away and get to visit. And of all the people I could speak to about this observation and say, tell me about it and give us some information, you are the one person that I would want to take and guide us about this.
Well, thank you.
So, my observation has been several things. I see businesses, and maybe it's just they're not updating their phone systems, but I observe businesses that have an announcement that says, please bear with us, because of the coronavirus, we're having problems getting to our customers. We're stressed by that. And I'm going, I think that was a fine explanation in March of 2020, but after 14 months, you haven't adjusted your business to what has changed. I kind of wonder about your business or if you've just gotten comfortable. I think about a friend of mine that I saw recently, did not recognize him. He called me by name, and I know he saw that deer in the headlights stare I had and told me who he was. And I said, sorry, I did not recognize you. What's with all the hair? And he explains to me that he is afraid to go to a barber because of coronavirus. And yet this person lives on Facebook, and every weekend I see pictures of him at baseball games. And then the last one happened, happened yesterday. In our area, banks have not opened their lobbies. And I think that's a little odd when I see just about every business out there has some form of where they have opened, but the banks are not opening their lobbies. And yet at this luncheon that I attended yesterday for our chamber, there were six bankers who were sitting there in an open setting, eating a meal and conversing with other people and saying, I realize you as the individual don't make the choices for your bank, but doesn't it seem a little odd to you that in one situation you're fine and in the other one we're afraid, we're tightened up in the spot? So those are my initial observations that I would like to share with you and say, what am I seeing going on here?
First of all, Tom, it's a great observation that you're noticing that people behave differently in different situations. Like your friend who goes to the baseball games but is afraid of the barber, or the banker who doesn't want people to come into their lobby but feels comfortable going to a luncheon. I would say your curiosity is a disruptor to the hibernation that many of those people that you're watching are living in. And by hibernation, if I take a step back, Tom, and we talk about the response to something scary or frightening, if our brain thinks that we can deal with it, we deal with it. But if our brain thinks this is too much, and if our brain thinks, you know, this is dangerous, but I think that if I work hard, I can battle this, that's when we engage in, I'll call it, assertive or aggressive behavior. So the banker will shut down the lobby. That would be an action that they could take that says, yes, we are a safe business. If our brain, though, Tom, thinks that this danger is too much, that's when we shut down our response. And so your friend, who doesn't go to the barber, is in a sense retreating from behaviors that prior to this COVID thing he would do without even thinking. And so in each of those situations, the fight or the flight or the freeze will be logical to our brain, especially when our brain isn't thinking. It's reacting to the circumstances. Now, one of the things that I've taught in my stress training is the idea of settling yourself or becoming calm and then choosing to act. And most people, when they're calm or more calm, tend to have a better, more effective, when I'm calm, a more effective or a more authentic Frank will come out of me. When I'm a little bit uptight, my words might come out more quickly, or I might have trouble finding words. And in those moments, that's when I say that I would experience regret. I could have done better. And so one of the things that I've taught in my training is to help people with a fairly simple tool to realize how quickly I can get to that place where I'm not effective. And then I teach them some tools that help them settle themselves so that in the future, Tom, they're more capable of performing at their best. Is it okay if I give you an example of this?
Absolutely. Please do.
Okay, so I was working with this one client, and he was at the time going through a custody battle for his three teenage daughters, and his wife had restraining orders and this and that with a current boyfriend or spouse, and he thought his daughters were safer in his care, not in the care of his wife. And so he took him through this stress training, the Thriving with Stress, which is a 4-week training. And during it, he recalled standing in court, and he said he was using one of the tools. I call it tapping into your senses, which is intentionally focusing on your senses. And he was intentionally focusing on the chair that he was holding as he was standing in front of the judge. And he said, as I held onto the chair, I was aware that I wanted to speak. And he's a life insurance salesman, so he can not only speak, but he can aggressively speak. Some of his clients have called him a pit bull. So he's okay. He can be quite assertive. But he said as he was holding the chair, he realized it was his lawyer's time to speak, and he kept his mouth shut. And he said, Frank, I can't tell you how that saved me in the judge's mind. Now, I'm going to take it years later, okay? He had gotten sole custody of his three kids. And his then ex-wife called Child Protective Services saying that he was an abusive parent. And he got a call from the Child Protective custody lady on his cell phone while he was at a funeral home burying or preparing his father's funeral plans. And this person says, "I'm on my way to your house. There's been an allegation that you're an abusive parent. I need you there in 30 minutes, and we're going to have a conversation." Now, can you imagine what would be going through your mind in that situation?
Yes. I'm thinking, well, for one, it's a very big interruption, distraction from a very emotional moment in your life, and a voice with authority comes in a very threatening situation, and I could sense hyperventilating, and if you were going to give the eulogy at your father's funeral, all of a sudden you've lost control of your words, an internal panic mode almost.
Yes. So he called me the next morning. He said, "Frank, you won't believe this. As I was driving to my house, I felt my butt," he called it his butt, "his bottom on the chair of his car. And he said, I was able to settle myself and realize this person who's at my home could actually be an advocate for my children." And when he got to the home, he greeted the person with a smile on his face and thanked them for being in his home and asked how they could work together to resolve the issue. Now, to me, that's just a phenomenal recovery of who he internally is in the light of a circumstances that could very easily have triggered him to be defensive, aggressive, confrontational.
So is there a sequence that you teach? And I'm thinking about this person and thinking about myself, of situations I get into and going, wow, that's quite a... Am I correct in saying it's an acquired skill?
So I believe it's a skill all of us already have. And here's how you'll know that you have this skill. Have you ever been in an argument?
Not in the last 30 minutes.
And here, have you ever been in an argument when the phone rang? Now, if you've been in an argument
yes.
when the phone rings, like I've been in an argument when the phone rings, I'm able to go from screaming Frank to polite, cordial Frank in a nanosecond.
Good example, yes.
And so I have this ability that I know that I have to go from assertive, aggressive, fuming to polite in an instant. And what's really fascinating...
So is there something in your mind that you see this?
Well, what's fascinating to me is typically I'm furious, screaming, and hollering at someone that I love. And I'll answer the phone politely to a stranger. Which I think is kind of hilarious. That people have this ability to do an immediate shift in how they're choosing to behave. Let me say that again. People have an immediate ability to shift in how they choose to behave. Now, most of us would tell ourselves a story that says, "I wouldn't if you hadn't." Which then what we're doing is we're attributing our behavior to the provocation of someone else. Have you ever done that?
Elaborate, please, sir.
Where you would say, "Well, if you hadn't done this, I wouldn't have said that."
Okay, yeah. I see that as I'm using this as an excuse. I'm pushing the blame on you for my behavior.
Very good. And most people, that's a default that we have, because most of us do not like the pressure of being the one who's at fault. And so
yeah, I like to think I've got it all right.
even the people who think they have it most right or all right can have very negative self-talk when they feel they've underperformed. And a lot of us fly on autopilot. So the guy who popularized the term stress was a man named Hans Selye. And what he said was stress was an adaptive response. It was a general adaptive response. So when something noxious or unwanted happened, people would respond. And what he said that they responded in four different ways. One of the ways is they would have thoughts about the issue. Oftentimes they would have elevated emotions. They would have some form of tension or pressure in their body. And they would engage in some kind of reactive behavior. And so if you saw a snake in the ground or slithering towards you, you would likely pick up your feet or run to the other side of the room. And you might say that you were scared. And you might think, who let that snake in? And you would do this, boom, in a nanosecond. Unless you looked at the what you thought was the snake and it was actually a rope. And if you realized it was a rope, that kind of knee-jerk response would have been deemed unnecessary. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. Just like touching a person on the shoulder, and they scream, holler, jump, and all. I thought it was something.
But there's another thing that our brains do, and it's called time travel. And so, and this actually happened to me. At one point, I was doing some consulting work in a charter school. And over the loudspeaker, the principal came on and says, Dr. Wood, would you come to my office? I'll never forget. I felt like I was a fifth grader being told to come to the principal's office. It was amazing to me. It was amazing to me how my brain went back to that thing in the past and pulled it into the present, boom, immediately. And so if for the business owners, if you've had a teacher or a coach or someone from your past who made you feel less than, you've got a client who's able to trigger that same less than feeling, and boom, you'll feel like you need to prove something to that person. You need to stand your ground. And there's this internal kind of energy that happens that most people can feel. People feel it in their chest, some people in their shoulders, some people feel it in their hands, where in that moment they, boom, feel it. And somebody triggers them. And it's almost like this other force takes over the person. And they choose to react in that moment rather than respond to the person with whom they're really talking. Hmm. And so in a sense, I would be talking to my fifth grade principal, not to the current principal of the high school, that simply wanted to ask me a question about whether I was coming in the next day. But in that moment, going into that principal's office, again, I felt like a fifth grader entering that principal's office. And many of the business owners, they get a call from their accountant. And they might go, boom, what's wrong? Rather than saying, what's going on in this call and how can I respond to this phone call? And so they lose the moment that they're in deference to the moment that was that's provoking a reaction.
Okay. Folks, we've been listening to, and we're going to continue to listen to, our guest tonight. This is Dr. Frank Wood, author of the book, Thriving with Stress. Let me tell you how to find Dr. Frank. Phone number is 513-846-2241. 513-846-2241. And if you would like to write him, his email is FDR, okay, like Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR Wood, W-O-O-D, at gmail.com. And let's take a real quick station break.
This is PBN, the Profitable Business Network from Profits Plus.
So, Frank, we got only a couple minutes before we have to go to the bottom of the hour timeout for you. Here's let me ask a item that you had shared with me. I'd like to have you share it with people. You gave an example about a person answering a question that was asked of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned in it the question being asked. It was two scenarios and a teacher asking it. Would you share the story and how that relates to us?
Give me a little bit more on this one, Tom.
The one about the meal, eating. Where a teacher sees the homeless person and they hadn't eaten.
Okay, got it. All right. So this was a story of a person who wanted to I'll call it find God. And so they said to this teacher that they wanted to fast for 10 days. Now, fasting is choosing not to eat. And so after 7 days of not eating, this person went to their teacher, the sage, and said, I haven't eaten for 7 days. Things are going well. I'd like to push it from a 10-day fast to a 15-day fast. And the teacher said, well done. Good job. Go for the 15. Now, if that same teacher had walked out of the room and seen a homeless person who had not eaten in 7 days, for that teacher to say to that homeless person who hadn't eaten in 7 days, good job, well done, you can go for 15, would not be appreciating the suffering that that homeless person had experienced during those prior 7 days. And oftentimes in business, we will greet a person who we're talking to and presume they are the person we think we're talking to, or we'll presume that they're ready for a message. And we'll begin talking before we ever understand who they are. An example of this, I was working with a middle manager for a biotech company. And she had a junior guy who emailed her, this is his boss, his travel itinerary for a job interview. With a competing company. Now, again, I had taken her through my stress training, and she said to me, Frank, you would have been so proud. Because as I was preparing to fire him, I decided to ask him what was going on. And so I think his name was, Ted. She said, Ted, what's going on? And he says, what are you talking about? And she said, well, you sent me an email. She wasn't even critical of him. She was just asking him the question. And he said, I got to tell you, my wife is in severe depression. She cannot stand this town. And she told me about this job at a position that's similar to ours in a town where she has family. And I went there for a job interview because I love my wife. So that manager, could have attacked this man for being a sloppy, disorganized subordinate. Or she could have heard his story. Now, the amazing thing was she said, we need to figure out how to give you and your wife more time, perhaps less pressure here, but I can't afford to lose you because of your talent. So very quickly, this manager could have fired this person and lost the institutional knowledge that guy had. Or she could have...
As you share that story...
Yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Or she could have had a conversation with a person who she knows, or at least knows more about. And how often in business do we presume we know what we don't know? I think more often than we realize.
As you share that story, I think about a book that I got into, and as I read it, I think, boy, I wish I could, I need to capture more of those skills. And the book was titled The Southwest Airlines Way. The one example I'll share before we go to the bottom of the hour station break was that of when something goes wrong inside the company. Something, all right, so thinking of our audience. Small business, something goes wrong inside your business. The question asked, do we try to first go and find, here's the person who did it, who screwed up? Or in our business, do we stop and look and say, we have a system here, we have a business here. Where all did the business as a whole fail? But this isn't one person who made a mistake. It's like somehow or another, did we not have a guideline right? Did we not have an instruction right? You know, where did our system fail to support this particular employee here? And in the book, I want to say there's 8, maybe 10 different examples of things like if this happens or if that happens, how do you react to it? And I look at that as I was writing something today, as this is so relevant, about, wow, how do we see ourselves as a business owner? Am I working to solve it, or am I myself a whole lot of the problem? A friend of mine one day called me, and he was stressing with his business, and he was telling me this person problem, this person, on and on through all. I think there were 6 employees in the business. And I said, what is it that all 6 people share in common? And he goes, well, and he starts trying to guess at things. Well, maybe it's this, or, well, they all live in this town, or we all work 8-to-5 works. And I go, no, what do the there are lots of people who fit that bill. But all of your employees have one and only one trait in common. And he goes, I don't know what it is. And I said, they all work for you. And he just stops and goes, ouch, that hurts. And I said, not meant to hurt. But I said, this is where, in looking for a solution, we need to look first. Well, with that being said, we're at the bottom of the hour. And Dr. Frank, we have a tradition that because you're kind and give us some time, that we think you've been talking for a while, and we need to give you a moment to maybe get a drink of water, sit back, rest your throat a second, into the second half of the show. And normally I introduce the song at this point, but tonight I have a special guest who is going to take and introduce the song. Special guest, are you there?
I'm here.
Hello, daughter Amanda.
Hi,
welcome,
Dad,
to the show.
Thank you.
What are you going to play for us tonight?
Well, tonight we have a very funny and lighthearted take on a very popular Disney song. After over a year of dealing with pandemic, I find it refreshing to be able to find some humor on something that hasn't always been a humorous topic. I think it really helps the mind and the soul to just sometimes laugh. So here is a funny take from Frozen on the coronavirus.
Do you also have corona? Let's go outside and play. Slime together we had made. TikTok filming with a friend. Why did it have to end? We used to play together, and now we don't. I'm so bored, I wanna cry. Do you also have Corona.
Go away, Anna!
Do you also have Corona? Because the month is almost past. The lockdown's almost over now. I started talking to the pictures on the wall.
Hey, Trump!
The quarantine is almost over, and I'm really bored, just watching the hours tick by. I know you have Corona. You should have told me that before. You infected everyone. It's not that fun. What have you done? Now I also have Corona, and it's all your fault. I wish you would tell me why. Do you also have Corona?
Mandy, let me ask you right quick. Do you remember when you were a kid? I'm not going to give away your age, but do you remember when you were a kid?
Thank you.
When it what was then called Take Your Children to Work, do you remember going to work at the store?
I do, very well.
So I will brag on my daughter at this point. When she was a kid and she was a, for lack of a better word, she was a store kid. Loved being in the store, loved being around it. She was generation number five, and my parents were in the business at that point in time, and we had a practice that if you were going to come to work for us, as you applied for a job, there was a test, a written test. Wanted to know, basically, could you count change? Could you do math in your head? You know, something like, this is $12 a dozen. How much are three of them? And it was 20 questions. You had 20 minutes to answer it. And about the age of 13 or 14, Mandy was always pushing her grandmother and saying, I want to work in the store. I want to work in the store. And it was, no, you're too young. And then it's like, well, hey, child labor laws don't apply to people in the family. I can work in the store. And her grandmother saying, no. And finally she pushed her grandmother and said, give me the test. Let me take the test. So she sat down. She took the test. Her grandmother scored it. And she turns back to her grandmother and she says, Grandma, I have a higher score than the last two people that you hired to work in the store. I want to work in the store. And she did. And she worked there. And let's see, do you also remember when you were the sign painter that you painted the signs on the front of the store on the windows?
Oh, I love that. Yes. I still have pictures of that.
That was good stuff. Well, thank you, Amanda. Appreciate that you joined us. And to those two handsome grandsons, you tell them both that Pop-Pop says he loves them, and thanks for being quiet to let their mom be on the show. Frank, as we get back to you, I will say my family made a suggestion that that was not the right song to play. They said it should have been me, and they said the songs that should have been tonight should have either been Billy Joel's You May Be Right, I May Be Crazy,
mm-hmm.
or I should have had Paul Simon's Still Crazy After All These Years. But we found the Frozen song. I hope everybody hears it in the tone in which it was given, being able to accept it lightheartedly. I think about when I get into a stress situation and I'm really starting to get uptight, I mentally go back to the movie Smokey and the Bandit.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember seeing that movie? The story about driving a tractor trailer
Jackie Gleason driving his, wasn't Jackie Gleason in that movie?
Yes, that's him.
I just remember him being the cop.
He was. He was Sheriff Buford T. Justice was his name, and he had a son in there named Junior. Junior was played by a guy by the name of Mike Henry, and Junior always came across as being really dumb, and they wrecked the car, and it tore the top off at one point. And Junior's sitting there and looks at him and goes, Daddy, what do we do now? And Jackie Gleason takes off that big hat he wore, and he slaps it across the dash, and he goes, Junior, sometimes I just can't believe the crap that's happening to me. And it's a laugh moment. And when I get into bad spots and things are happening and I'm getting stressed, for some reason I pull back on that line right there. I just want to mentally pull the hat off my head and slap it and go, oh, my gosh, sometimes I just can't believe this crap that's happening to me. And for some reason, that's my pause moment that helps me to kind of, okay, Tom, settle down a moment. Let's look at this. Let's go further. A story that you gave me the title to, and, of course, I immediately go out looking at it to read this story, and I'm getting the connection, and I would like you to take the time to share the story and show people, hey, here's what this story means, and I guess a bit of self-examination, and that's the story of Zumbach the tailor. You tell
okay.
It, please.
Now, Zumbach the tailor was a story that that was told to me many years ago, and but oftentimes in business we can take on a role and then become trapped by that role, and sometimes this happens with a busy business person coming home, and they'll come home just in a state because they're trapped by the pressures of their job, and they don't have time to either give to their wife or their kids, and or like the bankers, they can get entrapped by the idea that they need to be a COVID safe workspace and either forego going to a luncheon like your banker friends went to, or go and feel somewhat awkward that at work we have these rules but here we don't. So Zumbach the tailor was this successful businessman wanted a new suit. And he knew that Zumbach was the premier tailor in town, that Zumbach was an Indian tailor. And so he went to Zumbach and got fitted for the suit, and Zumbach sent him off and says, come back in 2 weeks, your suit will be ready. And so when this successful businessman came back, he felt the suit, and it was like the finest material he'd ever felt in his hands. And so he tried on the suit, and the pants fit perfectly. And when he tried on the jacket, one of the sleeves was 2 inches longer, so he felt, than the other sleeve. And he said, Zumbach, you've made a mistake. And Zumbach the tailor says, I don't make mistakes. You're standing wrong. Stand with this shoulder lower and this shoulder higher. And he did, and then the arms fit. However, he was like... standing with in an awkward way to fit into the suit. And as he looked himself in the mirror, he says, Zumbach, the back of the suit is all bunchy, and my wife, she loves a suit that fits well. Do you think you could take in the back? And Zumbach says, no, the suit fits perfectly. You're just standing wrong. And so he pulls down the guy's head and pushes back his shoulders. And as he looked in the mirror, Tom, the suit, while he was standing in a very uncomfortable way, actually did fit him. And so he left the tailor's office because he got snowed by Zumbach's words and was riding a bus on the way back to his office. And one of the bus riders says, you've got a suit made by Zumbach. And the guy, you know, standing uncomfortably, like holding his breath, not being able to even breathe because he didn't want the suit not to fit, said, how do you know? And he said, well, only Zumbach could be a tailor who could fit a cripple like you. Now, the reality is that you might put on successful businessman hat. And this is something that's also true for business people who golf. They'll go from a boardroom where they know all the answers and they're telling people what to do, and they'll step on a golf course with a golf pro and they'll turn from businessman to little kid. and say, just tell me how to hold the club, pro. But when we get stuck in a role of behaving in a certain way where I'm a hardcore businessman and I don't take any gruff from anybody, we can give that same demeanor to our kids or to our spouse or to our friends or to our parents. And we can become very short until what I think the I'm going to call it the critic buster, is the person who looks back at us from the mirror. Because the person looking back from you in the, from the mirror to you, that would be you, Tom. You will sometimes feel like you're a fraud. It's like, if these people really knew me, and this is where when we take off that suit and we're our natural self, and we exhale, we don't want to put that suit back on. However, how many people continue to go to that job that just doesn't fit because the benefits or the retirement, or it's the right job for me right now? Because I remember a friend, Tom, who worked for Merrill Lynch or one of those brokerage houses, and the brokerage house told him, this was 20 years ago, maybe 30 years ago, told him, we want you to give us 7 years of your life. And you give us 7 years of your life, forget your family, forget your wife, forget your kids. We want you to give us 7 years of your life. And when you do that, if you do that, you will be successful. And how many of those people believed that lie or that myth at the sacrifice of 7 years of their child's life? Or 7 years of their marriage? Way too many. I think way too many casualties have been created by the myth of, I'm going to work, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do such and such, and get paid such and such, or get benefits of such and such, and then I'll be happy. And in that moment, most people realize, who set up this game?
You know, as frank as you share that, I had to do a quick online search. Several years ago, there was a person who had been at a trade show I had spoken at. His name is Ron. Don't know Ron's last name. Don't know if I've seen Ron, but he owned a business called Arrow Floor Covering. And I do not remember where Arrow Floor Covering is. This was the note that Ron wrote, and it hangs with me. And I've several times shared it with a group of people as we're in business. And some of the people I'm thinking about tonight was when the pandemic first hit. I remember a business that had been here for over 60 years, and their announcement after 7 days of the pandemic, you know, so we're talking early March 2020, was that when we are allowed to open again, we're going to have a going out of business sale. We're through. Mm-hmm. And the same with the restaurant. As soon as it happened, said, that's it, we're through, we quit. And I was saddened by people, because mind you, at that point, didn't many of us think that this was going to be like a week-long event, a two-week-long event, and all would be fine? Who would have foreseen that here we are in the last part of April, a year later, so we've got 13-plus months into this, that we still don't have all the end in sight to this one? But Ron wrote this letter that, as you were speaking, it hits with me, and I think, how still appropriate. Dear Tom, just a note of thanks for you, your continued desire to improve the small retailer. We have seen a difficult year as our associates in the South have seen such difficulty. How we respond to the acts of God, the acts of man, and general problems in our business will determine the potential for the next generation. Here's where I see this next two paragraphs is my concern for the way people are looking at the pandemic today. And Ron said, I realize that I have failed to cast the vision for my grandchildren's future in my business. I am second generation, and I have been more focused on what isn't working and not focusing on what is working. I am sure that this is common with many owners. However, what son or daughter would want to be a part of a business that mom and dad come home each night complaining about? I think it presents a mystery to them as to why we continue to do it. However, they are not party to the good sales, the great service by the majority of our vendors, the thank you cards from our customers, the very food that moves us to remain engaged in doing what our fathers have done before us, because there is such a huge reward in doing what we do. I realize that I do make a difference in people's lives. And he closed, hey, thanks for the message. He says, because I realized that I would not most likely be asking myself the harder questions about my business and where am I going in the future. And I think the message from Ron ties very well in the message with Frank that says, how are we looking at this right now? And again, my concern is paralysis that I see with people. And so, and I guess the last question I get to ask you tonight as we close in on our hours, Frank, with this paralysis or perhaps this Zumwalt type of feeling, we're comfortable in something that's not fitting right and we're not shedding it and getting something else. I yield to you, the gentleman from Ohio and Florida that you are, the floor to say, give us the direction. What do people need to be looking at? What do people need to be thinking and doing going forward?
I'm reminded of an ad agency that I worked for, Tom, and it was started by two friends. I'll call one Bill and one Joe. Okay, I changed their name to protect the innocent. Okay. And Bill was a creative. He was like the sales guy, and Joe was a little bit cautious and liked to ask questions. Okay, and so Joe was constantly, or Bill, the second guy was constantly, the guy who was asking questions was constantly slowing everything down. And his partner wanted to go, 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 and these questions would slow everything down. And interesting, I took to the faster partner the idea that he could train his staff on stress, and that they would become more productive. And his response to me was, Frank, our staff, we thrive on stress. We eat it for lunch. We're like Marines with stress. We crush it. We look for it every single morning. So I said, well, give me your worst employee and let me try it on him and see what happens. And so I took their worst employee. My training is a four-week training. It just takes 4 hours a week for 4 weeks. So it's a relatively simple training. However, most businesses don't like it because it's not a learn and dump training. It's not a show up for 2 hours or 3 hours, get it all and take it into your life, because it engages the person to learn, experience, get reinforced with the subsequent lessons. So I took this one employee through the first lesson, and I said, so after this meeting, what are you doing? And he says, I've got two meetings with both of my bosses. So I said, really cool. Here's what I want you to do, is I want you to put your feet on the ground, and I want you to feel your feet inside your socks. I want you to just focus on feeling your feet inside your socks during this meeting, and then I want you to say whatever you want to say. And this employee had almost been fired 4 or 5 times for saying too much. No lie, I was with one of the bosses, because his kid, my kid, played lacrosse together. That night, And he said, "What did you do to that employee?" I'd never heard him speak with the kindness and the empathy and the accuracy that he spoke in that meeting. And so with that, he and his partner bought on to the idea that I could effectively train their employees. What, years later, his wife spoke to me, walking to a football game, actually, and she said, "I cannot thank you enough for bringing my husband back to me. Because before he went through your training, he would come home complaining and moaning about his partner's questions. And now he's somehow able to leave the stuff at work and come home and be with me at home." In a way, Tom, he was able to prioritize the value that he had over the problems that he was looking at. And in my mind, if a business owner like you, the person who wrote you that note, in a moment, somehow you clarified for him, focusing on the problems is not where your joy is. It's not where your business is. And it's not really what you want to share with your family. And so he changed in a minute how he was framing or the vantage point he was taking in his business. He went from critical business owner to value business owner in a moment, all because you made a simple suggestion. And your suggestion probably wasn't that much, but what your suggestion did for that business owner is in a moment when he was waking up to the reality of, is this really my life, you caused a shift. And that shift likely continues to favorably impress that person and his family regarding his business. And as a business coach or consultant, if you can encourage people or engage people to make that shift in that moment, you forever change the trajectory of their business.
If only I could remember what it was I said that day.
What,
I was appreciative of the letter. I wish I remembered exactly what it was that got to it.
Can I read you a quote that I think is important to that or pertinent to that?
Absolutely. It'd be something great we could close with tonight.
Where is it? "One does nothing, and nothing is left undone." So when you show up as Tom, and you're not performing as Tom the consultant or Tom the coach or Tom the radio personality, you just show up as Tom. And it appears that you do nothing. Just Tom shows up.
Okay.
But authentic Tom shows up. Nothing is left undone. And so I'm not sure it matters what you said to him. But what did happen was Tom spoke to this man. And probably Tom spoke to this man from your heart. And if there's a way that we could get business owners to lose the "I'm the business owner" hat to "I'm Tom" as the business owner. So they're not leading with "I'm the business owner," but they're leading with themselves, because it's themselves that brought the business to life. When people can authentically live there, the likelihood of real change happening through their business, in their employees' families, is much greater. And that's one of the things that drives me, is to engage people to get in touch with who they are as a person, as they're fulfilling the role that they're in whatever company that they're at, or whatever company that they own.
Folks, our guest tonight has been Dr. Frank Wood, which I'm very, very grateful, Frank, that you would be so kind to spend the time with us and share with us. His concept is thriving with stress, and I think it's wrong to say a concept, because he's shown you here's how it works. If you would like to contact Dr. Frank, If you don't remember what I'm about to share, you can always call or write me, and I'll put you in contact with him. His phone number, area code 513-846-2241. His email is FDR, that's like Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR Wood, W-O-O-D, at gmail.com. Folks, I appreciate you joining us tonight. I hope that the message that we brought to you, and trust me, I spent a lot of time thinking about whether or not to do the program. My hope is that the message that Dr. Frank brought tonight is one that hits home with you, helps to give you encouragement, strength going forward. Everything I see says we're coming upon a great economic boom. In choosing to do tonight's topic, I did so because I want you to be as fully prepared as possible to take advantage of it for you and for your business. Frank, thank you that you would be with us. Your time and your information is greatly appreciated.
Appreciate that, Tom.
Everyone, thanks for being with us. Next month, Richard Callio is going to be with us. Richard's expertise is going to talk about aspects of point-of-sale systems, related software, as to the changes that we need to be looking to implement going forward from the pandemic. Thanks to everybody for being with us. Enjoyed the visit with you tonight.
It has been our pleasure to share fresh ideas and trends from premier small business owners, coaches, and resources. Join Tom Shea and guests next month right here on Small Business Conversations from Profits Plus Solutions. This is PBN, the Profitable Business Network. Visit our website to learn more about us at profitsplus.org. There you will find our catalog of small business conversations, articles and advisories, news, meeting planners, calculators and resources. Also, we invite you to connect with Profits Plus Solutions on our various social media channels. Please like or connect with us on Facebook, LinkedIn, SlideShare, Twitter, and YouTube. We have links to all our social media channels on our homepage at profitsplus.org. Thank you for joining us.